Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Sprites of Life podcast. I'm Lucas.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Don.
And we're so glad to have you on another episode of our podcast. Gentlemen, what are your thoughts on democracy?
Big fan.
It's good. But if there was a way we could just manage it, just the right amount.
Yes. What if we could spread that goodness, though, that greatness? What if we could take it to everyone and give that greatness? Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be wonderful?
I think it would be super.
I think it would be great. Just that cup of liberty, that democracy. Oh, Chris, do you not want to be part of such democracy?
Lucas, my loyalties are to the Republic, to democracy.
That doesn't sound like a yes. Guards, do it to them.
Did you not get that reference?
I did, and it was actually very good.
If you're not with me, then you're my enemy.
Only a Sith deals in absolutes.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you, Don.
We are talking about Helldivers because everyone else is talking about Helldivers because Helldivers 2 is amazing. If you need to stop this episode now, did you need anything else to tell you in this podcast, go play Helldivers 2 if you can.
Yeah, if this is weirdly enough the breaking point, yeah, go play it.
Or you can listen to this episode while you play Helldivers. That is the preferred.
Yes, that would be the preferred method, but I hope they would do such a thing, but I'm not going to force them. Today, we are going to be talking
we don't want them to be distracted. Like, they have to alert their fellow Helldivers of threats to democracy.
I think it's pretty on par for Helldivers that it's, you're on your own.
Oh, you got your bros. You got your squad of four.
All I have seen is people murking each other in Helldivers.
That's part of it. They're thrilled to die for liberty, Chris.
From friendly fire?
Yes.
That's why. What other fire would there be amongst friends but friendly?
You got me there, Lucas.
You answered your own question. It's friendly fire. How else are you supposed to do it?
How are we talking about Helldivers?
So we'll talk a bit. Well, this whole episode is basically a bid to make you play it. So we'll talk about what really makes the game great, like the different aspects that we've
not. Arrowhead, give us free stuff.
Yeah, we'll do a lot of really great things about how this game is so good and why it's so popular right now. But we're also going to focus on one faction of the game and how they take a lot of inspiration from all kinds of different critters that live in our own planet. And you'll find out that while the bugs and critters on our planet understand the meaning of liberty and democracy much more than the filthy bugs of space, they still have some pretty amazing abilities.
Well, in fact, that's what the mosquitoes in my backyard tell me when they bite me, is that they're like, this is a free country, I can do what I want.
Now, speaking of a horrifying invasion of insects about to devour everything, I figured it would be on brand with the episode to talk about the massive invasion of cicadas coming to the United States in just a month, maybe a month and a half.
Which cycle of cicadas is this?
Both.
Oh, it's the super cycle.
It's the super cycle. First time in 221 years that both Brood 13 and Brood 19, I believe, are going to be coming out at one time, which is just terrifying. If you don't know what that means, both broods have their own spawn time. Like, they'll stay underground for well over a decade to try and avoid predators, and then they'll come out after that 13-year mark, and millions upon millions of them are coming out in each one of these. Oh, sorry. It was the 17-year and then the 13-year. That was it, not 19.
13-year. Yeah.
Yeah. My bad.
Imagine waiting 17 years to be like, all right, this time the birds won't be there. And then you come out and there's still birds.
Okay. Imagine it from the bird standpoint. It's like, I don't know, honey. I don't think we'll make it through the... Oh. Honey, get the kids!
It's gotta be so awesome to be a bird during the cicada. I mean, honestly, anything that's an insectivore, fish, go crazy. If you're a trout fisherman, it's gonna be crazy. I'm really any fish, birds, mammals, everybody's after the cicadas. I've actually eaten cicadas before too. I thought they were pretty good. Not my favorite, but yeah, I thought they were pretty good. And they were in like a kind of like fried up.
I mean, to be fair, I mean, yeah, you can fry almost anything, but like, I guess it would, I don't know, when it comes to like eating insects, I'm I like it when it's ground up and hidden more so than like out there that you're eating a bug. But I get how with the cicadas, like that's popped up of like, yeah, just eat the super bugs filled with protein.
They're just little like protein bombs.
Yeah, it's kind of nutty flavor because they're feeding on sap and stuff. But I do think I'd recommend, you know, don't just go out and eat cicadas. Like maybe do some research on that or find a place that sells ones that, you know, they haven't been, you know, eating something with pesticides. And I think shellfish allergies can like weirdly occasionally overlap with some insects.
Yeah, don't do some research if you're gonna eat some cicadas. Don't just go out and eat them.
They're free on the ground though, Chris.
You are not a bird.
The elites don't want you to know this, but the cicadas on the ground are free.
I have 20 million of them in my closet. If you I pulled up a map really quickly. I wanted to show you guys what we're looking at here. I want you to take a special look at Illinois. So the blue dots, I believe, represent the 17 year and the red dots represent the 13 year.
Look at even split.
I mean, look at Illinois. Look what happened.
I mean, yeah, Illinois is covered. I mean, what I meant is Illinois is evenly split by the.
Oh school. Yeah, no, it's in an election year, it just looks like a swing state during an election year, just all half red, half blue. Yeah, it's real bad for. I mean, for your cars and for your stuff and for your sanity at the noise, it's not going to be great. But it's a really interesting event that very few people. Well, nobody alive has been through it, so it'd be really cool if people are going to be getting all kinds of amazing footage and or trauma stories, which should be fine. Now, as far as news that doesn't make us as excited or interested, last episode, me and Don gushed about Battlefront because it was coming back. And boy, howdy, in a week or two, did that really change? Did y'all see what they did to it? What happened to the game?
Well, I was not as plugged in as you all.
So when they announced it, like, it was like the Battlefield collection. Like, Battlefront 2 was my childhood. That was one of my favorite games to play. When the game came out, not only were there only about 3 servers running, but the game it's crashing, the aiming stinks, like there are parts that are removed from it. It's a very poorly done launch of this game. Like,
and also, I think there were only about 100 like tickets per game. So if you could actually get into an online game, the match would be over in like minutes.
That's so sad.
Yeah, like all of the hype, they were a big deal was hyping up a 64v64 online multiplayer. And I think there were 3 servers with a capacity of like 200 apiece.
And unlike Helldivers, they are not figuring it out.
Well, the thing with Helldivers is you can kind of give them credit in that they were a relatively small dev and the game just blasted off. And I remember seeing a tweet from, I don't remember if it was the CEO or who, basically saying, we're glad people like the game, but don't get it until we get the servers fixed.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah. Also, the new Battlefront game, there was an issue where in some promo videos, I think even in game, they used some modded assets from modders without like crediting them or anything.
That's a no.
Yeah. Like comparing like how Helldiver responded to servers crashing versus these guys. I mean, I have their apology right here. If you want to see, like, obviously, oh, sorry. I misspoke. It's not an apology. It's a statement. So Espier's the team who made it. So they said, hang on, here it is. We'd like to thank the Battlefront community for their overwhelming support and feedback for Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection. At launch, we experienced critical errors, network infrastructure, blah, blah, blah. The result was increased high ping, matchmaking errors, crashes in servers. We've been working to address the issues and create network stability, and we will continue our efforts until our network infrastructure is stabilized. Please continue to report bugs, errors, or unexpected behaviors to support team. The thing from that is that none of that is an apology. None of that is saying, my bad. None of that is like, hey, we screwed up. They're not admitting any fault, which is why a lot of people got angry.
We're trying.
Unlike Helldivers 2, which popped off, this was Star Wars Battlefront 2. There are a bunch of people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s who, like, loved this game. This was, like, the Star Wars game that everyone compared all of the Battlefront games coming out from DICE. This is what they compared.
It also did get a lot of pre-orders, too, so they should have had some idea. in regards to the amount of volume. But apparently there have been some patches coming out. I think they're working on having... I was upset that you couldn't remap the controls for flying. Like, you couldn't invert them like in the original game. Also, split screens, which like I guess is less of a big deal. It's been cut from four-person to two-person. I don't know. I still like Star Wars. I still love the Battlefront games. I'm still going to pick it up. I might just give it a... I'm kind of glad I didn't get it launch day, but I'll probably wait a little bit, let them get some stuff together, because this has not been just like the simulations.
All I'll say is I hope that they have the same mentality that the Helldivers CEO had, because the other bit that they said that I liked, Don, was when asked about bringing on new staff to fix the problem, he said, why have a short-term solution for a long-term fix? Because he didn't want to bring people on to then fire them when the problem was fixed.
Wow, that's very admirable. Good for him.
So he's like, "We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. We'll use contractors. We'll get through it. But we're not going to bring people on to just get rid of them later."
Considering all the people that have been laid off in the gaming industry in the past like month or two, that's amazing. It also should be noted that Ace Beer also had the contract to do Knights of the Old Republic remake, but then they got taken off it and it was given to Saber Interactive instead because they were doing such a terrible job.
I do think, didn't the Ace Beer guys do, I want to say they did the Tomb Raider remasters, and I have heard positive things about them.
Yeah, they did that, and that's fine. Give credit where credit is due, but like it's still real sad that it was that this company has screwed up yet again on Star Wars one more time. So, yeah, I don't know. I want to talk about a good game now. I want to talk about things that make me happy. Oh, my Lord, Chris, if you had a PS5, we would be having so much fun. This game's a blast. Or a PC?
I am neither of those things. Apple and Xbox for life.
Sounds like a traitor.
I swear, I've almost bought a PS5. I've almost bought a PS5. Like five different times in the last week. So this is your chance to convince me.
I have a coworker who literally bought a PS5 just for this. Like after it came out, he went and bought a PS5 and got Helldivers. Like no lie, that is an actual thing. So I think I can do it twice. So dropping the bit, Helldivers 2 in part is so fun because you are honestly playing the bad guy. You are so evil. And it's so fun.
What could be evil about spreading liberty?
The tyrannical utopian society bent on spreading it, whether you like it or not. It's real bad. I think that's part of the fun, is getting to be the bad guy. One of the things that I love, like outside of like most video game stuff, is Warhammer 40K, because that universe is about being everyone some flavor of bad. And one of the reasons I like this game, we'll get to in a bit, is like the CEO likes those games, that franchise as well. And so I think that's where a lot, part of that inspiration, that similar idea of, yo, these people are horrible. Let's enjoy it. Let's have a great time with them. The game also has like such an amazing feedback loop, because if you just put it on paper, like just writing it down, you get guns to kill bugs or robots. Then you go back and get more guns to kill more bugs and robots over and over and over again. And that feedback loop is perfectly tuned to make you want to get right back into that game and go and blow yourselves up. Because yeah, there is a almost too much friendly fire, and that's how I like it. It's so much fun.
One thing I do really enjoy about the game is, like, obviously as you level up, you can unlock new guns and weapon stratagems, airstrikes, things like that as you go. But even from a relatively low level, it's the base weapons and the early weapons are still very effective. Like it's definitely less of a gear check and more of a skill check, I feel like, to a point. Obviously the higher level gear is very useful. But like you could be relatively new to the game, and if you're kind of have the fundamentals down, you're not normally like just like holding your team back, unless you're playing at like a very high level, in which case you definitely want to have the best kind of setups. But like it's very like, it doesn't feel so gear dependent. The grind is fun, but you don't feel like you have to do the grind.
You feel like you want to do it because you want to get the cool thing, not because you need the cool thing.
Exactly.
I mean, I go into fights with like the basic airstrike because it's small and it gets things done. Like, and you get that at one of the earliest levels. Like, the normal airstrike works really, really well in the game. Currently in the game, you are up against two factions, the Terminids and the Automatons. There's apparently a third faction that was in the first, Helldivers, and since none of us are...
They're a myth. They've been defeated. Don't need to worry about them. The Illuminator not real?
Illuminator not... Hashtag Illuminators what?
I said they're not real.
Since I'm no expert on cybernetics, I figured this episode we could focus more on the Terminids because they're a lot more used. They're a lot more fun to talk about. I mean, they're just giant bugs, and giant bugs have been a staple since, you know, a long time. You've watched Starship Troopers, Chris, right?
Yes, I have.
Okay, we had to make sure. I'm doing my part.
I'm doing my part.
That's good. One of my coworkers made a reference to Starship Troopers in a room of like 20 people, and only me and him get it. And I told him to the entire room that these people lacked culture.
How old were the other people?
They're all in like their 20s, 30s, a little older than that. It's not like I was in a room of like teenagers. They should have known. They should have known better. They are highly based on the bugs of Starship Troopers, but they are also based on the Tyranids from Warhammer 40K. And the reason I know this is because the CEO literally went on, like, he did a whole post on it that the only way he would add super large microtransactions was to feed his addiction to Warhammer minis. Because that's what he loves that stuff.
He's very open.
Yeah. He's like, no, I won't do it unless I need to feed my addiction. If you don't know anything about the Tyranids in Warhammer, they're basically giant bugs whose entire convoluted backstory is basically they come around and eat things and then make more of themselves and keep going. Very simple stuff, but they are absolutely horrifying. The entire reason the bugs are being killed is, one, their hatred of freedom, two, their disgust of democracy, and three, because they produce fuel when they die. They are literally walking piles of oil. You are less a hero.
It's not just oil, Lucas. It's the very valuable element 710. Which of totally course, doesn't look like oil when you flip it upside down.
I mean, we've gone from being heroes to being employees on ExxonMobil. We are basically the next level of offshore drilling is going out and
Why
killing
do
these
the bugs.
Bugs
hate our democracy? Are they stupid?
I find the idea of a bug that thinks offensive, Don. Of course
they do. They
stupid.
Actually hate democracy, or do they just hate you?
Well, I haven't gotten the chance to ask. You see, this Sounds breaker like shotgun... Yeah, this breaker shotgun's just a bit too loud, so any response to my questioning tends to be deafened.
There's actually a helpful tip in-game, Chris, that tells you that if the enemy attempts to engage in diplomacy, shoot them. You mustn't believe their lies.
Okay, naturally.
So with the bugs, they aren't just one form of disgusting. They are several forms. Some are the size of a small dog. Others are walking apartment complexes of death. Each form has their own purpose and their own ability. And that's not too dissimilar from, you know, insects and other organisms on Earth. If you get your skin crawling easily, you might not want to hear this net fact, but I'm going to do it anyway. On our planet, there are a group of insects that have that hive mentality that the bugs have in Helldivers 2. Hymenoptera is the order that they're found in. Those are the ants, the bees, and the wasps. Collectively, there are estimated to be over 600,000 species in this order alone. That is the low ball estimate. The high estimate for all the ants, bees, and wasp species on the planet is about 1.2 million of them. That's what you're dealing with on our planet. And they come in all kinds of crazy sizes with a bunch of crazy cool abilities. I mean, obviously we've talked about bees and wasps and ants in the past, but it's nice to talk about how this group has basically taken group work and teamwork to its highest level.
Are any of those bugs as big as the big bugs in the game?
Not anymore.
Okay, fair, good. Other part.
There were bugs on our planet. There were critters that could have been about the size, you know, the giant millipedes and stuff that used to live in oxidated, the dragonflies the size of eagles. They used to be around. Nowadays, things have gotten smaller, but weirdly more complex in how they do things. Like, there's some amazing things these animals can do. These insects, though, they don't, like, scream or anything to, like, talk to each other. They don't have a language that we would recognize. More so, they have pheromones and visual cues to signal each other to reproduce, to spread, to attack. And defending themselves has basically made it so that even amongst the same species, you can have wildly different roles and wildly different anatomies. So for the rest of this episode, we are going to compare the bugs and our liberty, freedom-loving homeworld to the filthy, disgusting, miserable, traitorous bugs that are not letting us turn them into oil that you can find in Helldivers 2. Because there's a lot of really cool bugs. And probably if you've seen what Helldivers 1 has, we'll eventually be getting even bigger bugs. So I'm real excited. At the moment we are recording this, flying bugs are currently disgusting propaganda by our enemies, and we will not be discussing them further.
Flying bugs are not real.
Not real.
I find the idea of bugs to fly offensive.
So the smallest bug we'll start with, and I'll grab some pictures for Chris so that way he can see them. So this is one of the scavenger bugs that we would be dealing with in the game, just one of them.
He looks like a friend.
So scavenger bugs, they come in a few different form. Some of them are a little bit more close to the ground, but the scavengers in-game are basically fodder. You only need one shot, and then they're gone. But they usually attack in groups or sneak around with the bigger ones in order to, like, attack you. Some of them even spit. Their task is simple. Clean up the leftovers from a fight. It tend to either scream or leave out a puff of pheromones to attract bigger bugs to the party and to try and kill you.
They're a punk.
Yeah, pretty much. They're little nobodies. They're the smallest, lowest order in the game.
But they, the like Lucas said, the ability to call reinforcements makes them still like sort of a threat in their own way. Like, you can't totally ignore them. And you can be in a scenario where they'll just keep sort of chain calling for reinforcements while you deal with the bigger guys.
Yeah, they can't really be ignored. And when you see a group of them, you let the squad know to blow them up. Individually, yes, punks. But as a group, they are very annoying. It is cool, though, that they use pheromones. Like, you'll see them leave a puff into the air, like a puff of what looks like dust, and those are just pheromones. And ants, bees, and termites all use pheromones as a way of following other organisms in their group towards a target. They don't have ears. Their eyesight is negligible in a lot of cases, not great at best. But with the right pheromones, you can get them to just come running. When it's that puff of a single flare for them, it's like an alarm pheromone, similar to how fire ants will use it on us when we are getting crawled with fire ant. They'll release a pheromone to attack, and that's why you get those fire ant bites where they're all biting at once, because they all got that chemical cue to attack, and it's awful. So it makes an uncoordinated mob really, really organized. Trail pheromones, though, they're a little bit different. So many ants will actually leave a trail from the hive, from the nest, where they're going. They will go right to a spot that either has food or a threat, and then they will stop leaving that trailer and then just walk on back. And then all the organisms in that hive, be them ants or termites or whatever, will find that scent, follow it, and then they'll be able to go ahead and collect from there. So the scavengers, as Don said, while little, can be very, very annoying. They can be a real pain to deal with, not only in real life, but also as to, you know, the little guys that are running around in the game. Like, in real life, you have to use exterminators to try and wipe the path, or you can even change the path so that way they can go and get exterminated. It's one of the ways that people will try and remove them from their homes. But those are the little guys. We got some big ones to talk about.
And we should point out, too, obviously, don't just auto-delete all ants, bees, and wasps.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yeah, they're so important.
But they do not hate our freedom.
The ones on Earth are good. They have chosen democracy, and they will be respected for that decision. All right, so I'm going to pull up one of the warrior bugs. These guys really stepped up.
Less friendly.
Yeah, they're also a whole lot bigger. They are much larger than these little scavengers. You're basically staring at eye level with them.
This looks like something from Dark Souls, Don.
Very pointy.
It doesn't have very many round shapes, does it?
Round means friendly, and it is not round, so it is not friendly.
Well reasoned.
I mean, you're not wrong in this. So there are three bugs we're talking about with this section. So we have warriors, hunters, and stalkers. So these are your main battle troops when you're dealing in the game. Once those pheromones come out, these all come out, and they each have their own specialty. So warriors are very heavily armored, and they really can't and can take a few hits. Next, we'll talk about a few of the others in a bit, but I wanted to talk first about the warriors.
Oh, fun warrior fact I learned about why they do so much damage is the player's head has a separate hitbox that isn't affected by their armor rating, and warriors' little overhead jabbies they do will just hit you in the head.
Oh, oof. So when those scavengers make that signal, they will come running. These are probably some of the first things that will start popping up, aside from more scavengers. Their abilities to basically shrug off most weapon fire unless you're hitting them with enough firepower is similar to some real-life insects. Don actually owns the insect I was going to be talking about today, so I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah. I feel like, too, they're also kind of in this group that we called there's the Brood Commanders, which are a little more heavily armored than the Warriors, even. So there's a group of insects called the Ironclad Beetles. We have several of them live in North America. I personally own some of the, they're also called the Blue Death Feigning Beetle because they're blue and they play dead. They're sort of like the fainting goat of the beetles. But yeah, they get the name Ironclad Beetles. Their exoskeleton is very unique, and it's sort of, I'm trying to think of a good way. It's the way it fits together is almost like a puzzle piece where it can take pressure. It's much more crush resistant, I guess is a good way to say it, than, a normal insect's exoskeleton would be, to the point where they kind of just are really, really hard to stomp. I mean, I would not stomp them because they're cool little guys. But I think the Ironclad Beetle can support like over 70 pounds of weight on its exoskeleton. When they're being preserved for captivity and like not captivity, but like as a specimen, you have like there's insects pinned to a board. Sometimes you'll have to use dental tools to drill through them because, like, you can't just stick a pin through it like it would be a butterfly that was being mounted as a specimen.
So, like, if this thing was the size of the warrior, it would be just bulletproof. There's nothing that's breaking through that.
Oh, yeah, we're going to ignore square cube law stuff, but yeah, it would 100% be bulletproof. Probably, without question. They're very, I actually do think they're pretty great pets. I've had mine for a while. They sit on my desk at work in a tank. I normally feed them. They kind of eat everything, which would be a problem if they were the size of a tank. But yeah, they eat dead insects, fruits, lichen, other plant matters. I'll feed mine. Actually, they like fish food a lot. And then I'll give them like carrots and stuff like that as treats, zucchini. But yeah, they're also an interesting pet because you can house them with a lot of other invertebrates that you typically couldn't house with things. Like, you could keep them, and people do keep them with things like scorpions or velvet ants because they're so heavily armored, they kind of just don't bothered by other things. Some tarantulas do actually eat them, but that's one of their few predators.
That's impressive. I kind of want to see how the tarantula breaks through iron, but not yours, maybe somebody else's,
yeah.
Not yours.
Yeah, there's several groups. I said I have the blue death feigning beetle. There's also which are like California, Utah, New Mexico area. There's more, probably the craziest one is the diabolical ironclad beetle. You guys are familiar with that one, Chris or Lucas?
What is it called? The diabolical?
Diabolical ironclad beetle. For an example, the diabolical ironclad beetle can withstand a crushing force 39,000 times its own body weight. So like a 200-pound man would have to withstand 7.8 million pounds of crushing force.
Yeah, I think I'm going to need the breaker shotgun.
Which is 28 double-decker buses, or sorry, 280 double-decker buses.
What is that in dump trucks?
So yeah, I know that's too British of a unit of measurement.
I mean, this one is a lot more friend-shaped though, so I'm pretty cool with it.
Round means friend.
All right, Chris, I'm going to give you your next bug now. So this one, here you go. Not as big or beefy, but a whole lot faster. These are the hunter class.
And not round.
Yeah, again, even sharper, in fact. They are spiky and fast. So the big thing about this guy is that it's quicker, but also it's got a pretty nasty cut to it. So when this thing gets closer to you, it's a slicer and a dicer as opposed to a stabber or a rampager. So when it also has a pretty wicked jump. It can get real far for something that's so big and heavy. With hunters, obviously when people think of super sharp, like insects, most people immediately go to a praying mantis, even though they're not actually sharp. It's just meant for like grabbing. When it comes to sharp in the real world, with insects, I go to the leafcutter ants for what they can do. So leafcutter ants, as the name suggests, they cut the leaves. What most people don't know is that they don't eat the leaves, but they take them down into their nests and then use them to help fermentate mushrooms that they do consume. So they're some of the first farmers in the animal kingdom. They were farming way before we were ever on this planet doing farming, which is a really, really cool fact. But their jaws are what's so amazing. Like many invertebrate organisms, their bodies sequester different metals into hard parts of their body. So you'll actually can look into their mandibles and you'll find zinc and magnesium and other metals that are weaved in on a molecular level. So that's why they're so able to cut and slice through leaves like it's nothing. We would need, at their size, a chainsaw and all kinds of crazy tools to get to what they're going through with literally their mouths, which is absolutely wild. Compared to like what this, even the hunter out here can't do much with its mouth, but this thing is, again, I love leafcutter ants for that reason, that they can just do so much.
They also like vibrate their jaws as well very, very quickly to sort of have like a electric steak knife kind of thing going on. Oh, leafcutter ants, not hunters.
Yeah. God, don't give them any ideas.
Okay, and the another fun, I guess less fun in a way, insect, or not an insect, arthropod, I guess, is the Brazilian wandering spider sequesters nickel and puts that in the tips of its fangs.
I know the ants one. I remember there was a spider. I just didn't know which one. All right, now this next one is kind of the glow up of the hunter. Meet the stalker.
Not round, and a lot of really bright colors.
Mm-hmm. What are the name of those?
It's ironic because it is invisible.
Yeah, that's the heart. It's a stealther. I mean, you see it when it stops. Like the second it becomes like visible, it's right on your left shoulder and gnawing at it. They're awful. You have to have your friends around you.
They can slurp at you.
Pretty much. Honestly, it's my least favorite to fight, even more so than one we'll get into in a little bit. No, these things are absolutely the worst to go after because literally when you see them, you have to find their specific nest. All the other ones, they'll come out of whatever hole. The stalkers have their own specific stalker holes you have to blow up because they are that much of a
pain. They do stop spawning once you take out their nest, which shows that even the devs know they're a pain because there's no other terminid that just stops spawning once you destroy their nest.
Yeah, eventually once you get to a high enough level, it's just chargers all the way down, and we'll get to them in a little bit. But the stalkers going invisible and they're translucent, there is no insect that can go that invisible. The closest I could find for something like that are the squids and the cuttlefish that can go translucent. I think I mentioned it before, the experiment where how they had a cephalopod with a checkered pattern floor, and instead of trying to blend into something impossible for it to blend into, it went transparent in order for you to see through it. And transparency is a pretty cool way to try and avoid being seen. So I unless anyone else knows an insect that can somehow use optic camouflage to like trick you.
I think the closest you get are just very heavily camouflaged insects. Things like the various orchid mantids.
Mm-hmm. Stick bugs.
I guess less so the stalkers, more so the hunters. Something about their, even though they're not actual eggs, they're more vestigial wings, but the way their stance and just body shape reminds me a lot of a robber fly.
You know, you're right. Hang on, let's give Chris some more nightmares. Give him a robber fly.
Yes, because the robber fly has a short, sharp proboscis that it stabs.
It looks kind of fuzzy.
Those are spikes.
Oh, that's less.
I think it's got a little bit of fur to it.
Yeah, the legs
are spikes for grabbing.
Will they prick me, or are they like not big enough?
Oh, they don't want to go near you.
Well, I think the issue would be if you were in a situation where you were worried about the legs. They do have the ability to have a pretty painful bite, but they aren't aggressive towards people. They're not like a horsefly. In fact, they probably kill horseflies. So they have been known to, I think, take things out of spiders' webs. But they also attack pretty much everything that flies, and they seem to ignore what would otherwise be like a anti-predator chemical and stuff. Like bees, ants, dragonflies, grasshoppers, spiders, moths, butterflies, beetles, So they have like a short, sharp proboscis that they stab with. And I think they have some level of like neurotoxic venom or something like that.
When you said that they steal from spiders, all I could think of was Stoop Kid and Hey Arnold. They just found out that like the spiders won't actually leave their web.
What are you gonna do about it? What are you gonna do? You gonna leave the web? No, I'm just gonna take this. I'm gonna take
Stoop
it.
Spider's afraid to leave his web.
I'm trying to find a guaranteed. I said I'm pretty sure that's the origin of the Robberfly name that I've heard before. I'm trying to find like a verified reason for that though, just so I don't give completely incorrect information.
Yeah. In the meantime, the main version of stealth I found with something similar are different organisms that will use pheromones to trick other organisms into thinking there's something else. The caterpillar of the large blue butterfly uses ant pheromones and a look that look like a queen larvae. And so the ants, instead of killing it, will pick it up, take it right to the nest, and then it will feed on the larvae until it's large enough to turn into a cocoon. And then they'll still be protected. So it's basically getting your own bodyguards, because nothing is dumb enough at that size to go and attack an ant's nest without horrible ramifications.
Yeah, we see that too. There's a few, I think there's a few like spiders that mimic ants and also just sort of go in there and eat them.
There's a few creatures that have evolved a way to get through it, but everything else is like, no, we are not trying that. All right, so these next bugs are that next level up. So we are going to go ahead and let me get you a charger. This one is, I wouldn't call him friend-shaped. I wouldn't even call him friend-adjacent. He's kind of a jerk, and he doesn't know when to stop.
Although he is more around than the other
ones. Yeah. Yeah, he's around all right. Just beating on us and ragdolling my body all over the map. Yeah, meet the charger. When you see one, just when you break out the heavy ordnance, as you can clearly see, their armor is ridiculously large and tough. And there's very few.
So, yeah, this is the meter thick armor I was talking about. Which, it's honestly, like, when you were talking about the ironclad beetle, this was who sort of came to mind for me a little bit, just in terms of like durability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I figured with the warrior as well, like the warrior could also fit with that one. But for me, the reason I thought of this one more is because it shows that drastic size difference of something that's the same species. Like the scavengers are part of the same species as this thing. And the scavengers are basically like nothing to this thing. They're like right up to its little ankles. And so that's what you get a lot of times with ants and with other organisms, is that the worker ant versus the soldier ant, and their size difference is insane. With some ant species, the soldiers can be over 10 times the size of the worker. And the charger is a really good example of that. It's very easy to tell which is which up close. The army ants are the very famous example of this. If you look at a worker army ant versus a soldier, the army ants have massive mandibles that are meant for breaking apart anything dumb enough to mess with the workers. But also the workers are going to be small enough to be able to slip around them in order to keep doing what they need to do. So it's a really cool balance. And the people in South America use army ants in order to work as pest control for them. They don't need pesticides. They just literally lift their stuff out of the way, and then the ants are going to come and rip apart their fields of any and all pests, since, you know, they're pure carnivores. They're not going to bother any of your stuff. But the charger is absolutely one of the coolest designs. The only way to really kill it is to try and break through the armor, which is why for a long time most people used the railgun, but they kind of nerfed it a little bit. They made it a little bit easier to shoot them, I think. Yeah, that was it. There was one time where I literally picked up a portable rocket, just launched it straight at the head, and was able to get a perfect shot enough to kill it in one go. And that's still one of my proudest moments, but still very difficult to do. There is one other giant horrifying bug monster that we need to talk about, and that is the bile spitter. Well, good news, Chris. This one is slightly rounder.
Friendly.
Sure. Whatever you say, buddy.
That's a friend.
It's filled with friend fluid.
Pointy and round.
Yeah, it don't worry. It doesn't use its points to hurt you. It uses other things.
Yeah, so in terms of like offensive capability, the bile spewer does do something similar to what we see with certain ants and termites. There are some termites that have like a modified face even to shoot like a caustic sticky liquid. And there are ants that shoot formic acid and other things like that at predators. The Biospewer spits instead, a sort of a caustic substance that can pretty much one-shot you. But the design-wise, none of the other, the actual real-life equivalents are, like, big bloated guys, though. Most of them have, like, weird heads and stuff, or they just look pretty normal. But the Biospewer's design reminded me a lot of the honeypot ant. Just a group of, also just called honey ants, and honey ants have a special group of worker ant, which are called repletes. And this ant's whole job, they live in desert environments, and this ant's whole job is that it climbs to the top of the nest inside, like hangs from the ceiling, gorges itself, and then other ants come and put more food into its mouth, and it becomes super engorged with like nectar type stuff. And then they act as like living food pantries for other ants. They like exude it. The other ants don't just eat them, but they'll exude like a honeydew substance for the other ants. And that's how the ant colony will get through deserts in like times of like long dry periods. I think they're mainly in Australia. And the largest repletes can actually have a mass of 1.4 grams.
It's like time to load up, Steve.
Imagine being given out the colony job, like soldier, worker, pantry, soldier.
Do you think that in these ant colonies, that's like a revered position? Or
I mean, you get to sit inside all day and the other ants feed you and stuff. So like, I guess it's probably worse. You get to, I mean, you'd probably just get to digest as much of the colony, as much of those calories as you want. So there's one species, Camponotus inflatus in Australia. Repletes formed 49% of a colony of 1,063 ants.
Wait, so like 500 of them were storage?
Yes, were storage. And then of a colony of 835 ants, they formed, a colony of 4,019 ants, they formed 46% of the colony. So it seems like that they are roughly a little less than half of the colony is just straight up storage space.
Wow, so I have to change my previous joke. It's literally pantry worker, pantry worker, pantry soldier, pantry.
And their tunnels go very deep and large. I guess this one colony that was studied had a depth of 1.7 meters and a length of tunnels of 2.4 meters from the nest entrance.
The whole big rear thing is pretty cool that it could store that. As far as the spitting goes, the most famous thing that comes to spitting in insects is the bombardier beetle. It's been used for almost every bit of fiction. Also, fun weird fact, the mechanism behind how it works was part of the influence for fuel injectors in cars, was the bombardier beetle and how it mixes chemicals in such a way that it allows it to basically shoot a fiery napalmy gas liquid spray from its backside. It's a really cool bug if you've never seen it before, but it's one that most people have gotten a chance to see. It's usually the first on the list of weird bugs kids learn about.
Yeah, no, I know that one.
Are you aware of the termites with a gun on their face?
Like a real bug?
That's a real bug.
I do not know it said gun termite.
Yeah, gun termite. It's a thing. So termites, some of them will have a gun called a fontanelle gun. That's what it's called. It's a gland that shoots a sticky substance right out of the front of their face, and it sticks to anything unlucky enough to get hit. If it's one shot, it's like just stuck there, but the force of several of them firing at once is enough to kill almost any animal that's around their size, just like pure firepower. So if you're talking about organisms that can actually do the job of a bile spitter, yeah, the termites might have them beat on account of the fact that, one, they're real, and two, I think it's actually more accurate. There were studies found that they were surprisingly accurate with it, and instead of like a stream of disgusting acid, it's literally like a pinpoint shot, which, again, these are termites doing this, like real organisms that do it. I'm going to see if I can find a good picture of the fontanelle gun for you. So this is like an older picture of what it looks like. Just go and blast him. He just keeps on blasting. The last bug I'm going to talk about, that is going to be the bile titan. The bile titan is so far the biggest organism that we are dealing with in the game. I say so far because I'm pretty sure they're going to have a hive king involved at some point. But until they do, this is the biggest thing we're dealing with.
Back to pointy.
Oh, yeah. And I know just from a picture you can't tell how big it is. This thing is like 5 stories tall. This thing is absolutely massive.
I have seen videos of this one.
Yeah, my favorite way to drop them is by using your friend's drop pods to pierce through their skin. But yeah, when you're fighting this thing, it's fully armored. Very few things can stop it. It is the biggest, nastiest thing out there. Honestly, though, it doesn't spit, which I thought it would given its name. But most of the time, does it spit? I don't fight them enough.
Yeah, it definitely spits.
Okay, it definitely spits. Yeah, retract that. It does spit. Retract my statement. You have to use missiles to kill it. You have the 500 kilogram bomb to get rid of it. This thing is absolutely annoying to fight. And there's nothing really to compare it to on Earth. Like, at all. The closest thing I can compare it to is the giant Weta. I believe a giant Weta, they are found, their cousins, the Jerusalem cricket, are found here in North America. But I'm going to grab you a picture of just how big it is. So I want you, Chris, to imagine the biggest bug you can think of. Like, I don't know, I don't know what bug you think it is, but imagine the biggest bug you can think of. And it's probably smaller than this.
Oh no.
Oh, yeah. These are
the
ones
that, the giant Weta is the one that can freeze solid as well, right?
Oh yeah, no, they're also ice proof.
No.
It mostly eats vegetation. Mostly.
Deeply, deeply uncomfortable.
Yeah, no, it's not round. It's very spiky. Look, he's eating that carrot. Don't he likes his vegetables. Wouldn't you like it if more people ate their carrots? So the only reason this thing is allowed to be as unholily large as it is because they're found in New Zealand, and it's an example of insular gigantism. Basically, the island has no predators for them, so they were allowed to get big due to the amount of food that's also there for them. It's the only place in the world you can find them is New Zealand. So, you know, you should be good as long as you don't go and visit that beautiful, wonderful country. Otherwise, you're fine.
You'll see this demon insect.
It's fine, though. It's mostly vegetarian. Mostly. I mean, they're pretty opportunistic. But it is cool that so many weird, terrifying creatures live on this planet. And I'm sure at least some of them were the inspiration somewhere down the line for these giant, horrifying space bugs. It's such a fun idea to take some of these things that can happen in our world and, you know, notch it up to 11. That's the whole reason we started doing this podcasting stuff, is that games took so much inspiration from the natural world. And I love it. I love this game for doing this. I love this game for getting a chance to blast bugs with your friends and like have to actually strategize and work together. It has been years since I've had this fun doing multiplayer games. And I'm so glad that people have learned to appreciate this game and the memes and the cosplays and all the... Someone made an actual music video. Don, you send it to me, the music video for like the pilot.
Oh, for Eagle One, yes. Yeah, there's been a lot of... The level of fan creativity has been great. Everyone seems to just sort of be having a good time with it. And it's like a game where... Is it my general online experience, even with randoms and stuff, has been pretty overwhelmingly positive. Like, people seem to be... Sort of just have fun with it, really. It's like, because it's only PvE, I feel like you definitely like get some people that really want to focus. In the higher levels, you definitely have to be a little more serious sometimes. Overall, the general positivity. Everyone's sort of just having a silly time.
I want to thank y'all so much for listening. Again, I love getting to talk with my friends here about this podcast, and the fact that me and Don were able to just play this game to do quote unquote research on the episode. Oh, so much fun. Loved every second of it, Don. Well, on that note, I hope you guys have a great rest of your day or night. We'll catch you guys in the next episode. For democracy, ladies and gentlemen.